SBS Radio.
The symposium was conceptualized after the Christchurch massacre when it became clear that the person who had committed this atrocity was in fact an Australian. There was quite a lot of discussion, debate about how this person was represented. So you had some of the local media show photographs of him that humanized him as a little child, you know, who was from a working class background and so on and so forth. There was commentary coming from Muslim viewers and others who were saying, well, you don't get this kind of representation of other people who have perpetrated terror. So already this question of who is one of us and how do we think about people that we perceive not to be one of us. And as we've suggested, Prime Minister Ardern, when she said the people who were killed, they are us, and the person who did this is not part of us, that was a powerful kind of moment of affirmation of people who are othered in the nation. So we came up with this idea of one of us. Since we conceptualized it, we've had this terrible massacre, series of massacres in Sri Lanka, which is actually my birthplace, where hundreds, over 300 people have been killed. And so again, we ask this question about what is it that enables some people to be seen as not part of us, and therefore enables, you know, them to be killed in this really heartless fashion.
Yeah. And when we speak about all this, there is our first peoples in Australia have been at the receiving end of this kind of, the next step from hate speech is hate crime. They've been at the receiving end of this for more than 200 years now.
That's right. So when we spoke about the Deathscapes Project, this was one of the points that we were trying to make, that it begins with dehumanization, so that certain lives are seen as disposable, certain lives are seen as a threat to the state. That is one of the first steps in which, this kind of violence can be perpetrated. I'm not making an equation between the violence of the state and the violence of these individuals, people who commit acts of terror, but I'm saying that dehumanization, which is often associated with racial othering, is a common factor that enables the rest. Even as we disavowed and deplored the violence of the massacre in Christchurch, we had Indigenous leaders saying, well, massacre is not unknown on this ground, or indeed in on the ground of Aotearoa, New Zealand. Yeah. That these histories are still playing out.
In the upcoming symposium, you're working with the Museum of Freedom and Tolerance and other participants. Run us through all those participants and their involvement in the symposium.
We are convening this in collaboration with the Museum of Freedom and Tolerance. The speakers at the symposium are actually going to be from both Indigenous and Muslim Australian background. We will also, I think, now include speakers of Sri Lankan background. We want to really ask, how do we understand one of us? What are both the destructive aspects of identifying someone as one of us, one of our in-group, and what are the ways in which we can refuse that kind of destructive, exclusive identification, one of us, by actually saying, well, we recognize the humanity of those who have died. We see them as people. I mean, the killer in Christchurch, one of the things that he kept insisting on was the birth rate. He was saying, well, the birth rates show that they are outnumbering us. That was the kind of appeal of his manifesto. So again, we have this idea of who is us, who is they.
Yeah, but someone like him, his speech is not something that just comes out of the blue. I can see where some of these ideas that others are maybe breeding at a faster pace than his own people. There are sections of the political class that have that language, although sometimes it's said in a very subtle manner that doesn't really... someone who doesn't really pay attention might not understand what they mean, but for someone who really is attuned to that kind of language, picks up the message.
That's right. And in some cases, yes, as you say, it's subtle. The discussion of population and migration rates is sometimes subtle, but at other times it's quite overtly racialized. And we have had the language of invasion, for example, being used
for refugees.
To talk about asylum seekers and refugees. When they come into this country, there's this sense of these people are invading us. That's one of the ways in which it plays out. We also have this kind of language in comments about certain groups being targeted as ones that don't assimilate or have not integrated, or who have, for example, certain comments that were made by the ministers around Lebanese migrants.
Or Sudanese migrants.
All of these things are subtle and not so subtle, and they definitely feed into that sense, into what I can only describe as racial paranoia. You know, the sense that you are being overtaken by others. You know, that makes violence against them acceptable. It enables violence. I mean, the first step is to say you're not one of us, because that then makes, you know, it possible to not see the loss of that person as valuable as the loss of someone you see as part of your group.
Yeah, it's just a process of othering them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why it was so powerful when Jacinta Ardern, she just said, the people who have died are us. The man who did this is not us. We repudiate.
Yeah,
and it was that kind of, absolute claiming and disowning that I think was so powerful, because we really haven't seen that.
Yeah.
I don't think in other instances where state leaders have so clearly marked people who have been othered, as you say, as part of us.
Yeah. But I also see, because when we speak about this, is the concept of hate speech as well, in the sense that sometimes, this is maybe not the context, but when I look at the language used for refugees, there is a consensus in the political class, in the media, to always refer to refugees as illegal entrants, illegal migrants, illegal arrivals. Yet, many of them, I know many of them are lawyers. They know that refugees, their status is regulated through the Geneva Convention, which is known to every asylum seeker, known to every lawyer, and yet they keep pretending they don't know that you are not illegal until your case has been processed. And they say it, and why would they say that, and for what purpose?
I think it's picking up on these pressure points which have always been there in this society, you know, racist overtones. It's a kind of dog whistling to those fears that have always been part of the unfounded fears always been part of the settler state, the settler state which was founded on racist principles.
Yeah.
First of all, the principle of the exclusion of indigenous people, and second of all, the exclusion of non-white people.
Yeah.
And so these things return, I think, in the present through this language of the illegal. The man who committed the atrocity in Christchurch, his name I will not mention, he had picked up these references to the point where he had inscribed, you know, references to the Crusades, prior to the Crusades. So he was really thinking in these terms of religious enmity, racial enmity, going back centuries. And it's the way in which these ancient myths and stereotypes and fears of the other keep circulating in our culture in various forms, among, as you say, the political class and the media, as well as people who are often labeled as fringe. But the fringe also relies on these more mainstream forms of hatred.
Yeah. And on an academic point of view, as someone who is observing these things, since the Christchurch massacre, I know it's a little bit too early maybe to ask this, but have you noticed, or in the data collection or in the way you're processing your work, have you noticed an increase in cases of hate speech or violence against Indigenous people or other people since the Christchurch massacres? Besides, of course, the very deplorable terrorist attacks in Sri Lanka.
It's hard to answer that because I think on the one hand, there's been a public rush to, distance themselves from what has happened. You had Parliament denouncing Fraser Anning, who had made those, extremely
offensive,
disgusting,
yeah,
racist remarks about people having brought it on themselves. So I think that there has been, on the one hand, that level, that attempt to distance themselves. But at another level, I don't think that we have in any essential way addressed the racist undertones and indeed overtones of, say, the population debate. Just a few days after the Christchurch massacre, we had an announcement from the ruling party about cuts to migration. I really did question the timing there, whether given that this murderous manifesto had began with the words the birth rate.
Yeah.
I wondered whether that was actually what was going through the mind of our rulers when they decided that they were going to make migration and population issues in the election.
From the symposium, what next from there?
What we wanted to do was make, a statement as academics, from our position as academics, because often the work we do becomes invisible to the general population. And so we try to do something a little bit different with the structure of the symposium, because we are actually asking members of the public to send in questions, and we have a hashtag, #ResistRaceHate. So the idea is that we are asking people to send us questions about what next? How can we, in our everyday lives, as well as how can we as academics and intellectuals, address questions of racism? How can we stand in solidarity with communities who are grieving and who have been targeted, and how can we contribute to healing? The Museum of Freedom and Tolerance, some of the artists associated with the museum, who themselves are various ethnicities, but many of them have Muslim background, they have started creating what they call the Garden of Healing. And the Garden of Healing is a project in which people can come in and make flowers and write the names of those who have died on the flowers. And there will be a projection of this in the large public screen at the Perth Cultural Centre prior to the beginning of the symposium. So I suppose what next for us, I mean, one part of it is, yes, healing, community healing, dialogue between people who are doing, researchers and writers and intellectuals,
yeah,
and members of target communities. There were very moving public demonstrations of solidarity with those who had died and those being lost, but really asking how can we take that solidarity to the next step. And I'm not quite sure yet what form that will take. That might take the form of a community artwork, for example, but I'm hoping that it will also take the form of some kind of writing, some kind of academic research as well. We would really encourage people who are not in Perth and who would be interested to go to our Eventbrite page, One of Us Symposium, or they could use the hashtag #ResistRaceHate and start communicating with us so that we have some feedback from them as well prior to the symposium, which will be at the State Library on Thursday, May the 2nd.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.